All of us are heartbroken by what's happened.
He engaged an active shooter outside of the temple. Multiple rounds were exchanged. The officer was shot multiple times.
Mitt Romney's basically paid no taxes in the prior 12 years.
I have paid taxes every year, and a lot of taxes.
Bolt's gonna do it again! Gold all the way!
All of the week's top stories there in one audio montage. It's Friday on The Takeaway. That means our Follow Friday segment. Time to take a look back at the week's big stories. Aftermath of shootings in Wisconsin, the presidential race, and the Veep stakes heating up. And also, of course, the Olympics. Joining us on Skype from Wisconsin is documentary filmmaker Valerie Coward. With me here in the studio, Farai Chidea, a friend of the show and frequent Follow Friday guest. And we're going to go first to Rob Broomby, correspondent for our partner, the BBC, in London, to wrap up the Olympics and talk a little bit of gold, silver, and bronze. Hi, Rob.
Todd, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Look, you know, we're a little bit myopic over here in the United States. We love to watch our Americans compete, and that's just about it. But look, Kerry Walsh Jennings and Misty May Traynor won their third Olympic gold playing against other Americans. The U.S. American women's soccer team was phenomenal. Allie Raisman, these are all sort of the American highlights. There are others. What are the highlights from your perspective from this week as you sit and watch the games?
Well, if you think you're myopic, just think how we feel sitting here, third place in an Olympic chart for Great Britain. So we're struggling with the World Service to try and tell the world that, yes, we're excited about how well Team GB is doing, but we really care about the rest of the world too. And actually, yesterday it was very easy to care about the rest of the world because it was really a story yesterday of Jamaica and, of course, the remarkable Usain Bolt. And, of course, the man who almost caught up with him yesterday, Johan Blake, his teammate. So that was a remarkable 200 metres for the Jamaicans yesterday, which thrilled everybody. But, you know, all sorts of people get overshadowed in these big Olympic events. Yesterday, David Rudisha of Kenya broke a world record in the 800 metres, but that was in the shadows, sadly, because of the showmanship surrounding Bolt. But even Mr. Bolt himself had the grace to go up to David Rudisha on the track and give him his characteristic two fingers as if triggers pointing at Rudisha as if to say, this was your day. You got that world record, 1.491 in an 800 metres. That was a tremendous thing and a tremendous day as well for Botswana that got silver yesterday in that event at its first ever Olympic gold. So don't beat yourself up, guys. Come on, we're bad at this too, you know. The other person, I should mention this to be fair to you guys, the other person that got overshadowed and all that was Ashton Eaton, your own man in the decathlon, who got gold after that event. So many of the people were packing up, and your guy comes in and sweeps up. So congratulations to him as well. So I think we all get a little myopic in these occasions. We try not to, but it's there. It takes over. And Team GB, it has to be said, is doing rather well. It's exceeded expectations by a long, long way. And as a colleague of mine just said a few minutes ago, it's as if the whole nation is walking around feeling like someone spiked the drinks.
Well, that's great, because the question I want to ask you, Rob, before we let you go is what is the sense among Britons about the success of the games? Of course, on this side of the ocean, Mitt Romney on his tour showed up before the games and made a couple of comments that got people from the prime minister to the mayor of London pushing back on him, saying, well, they might be ready, they might not. That was just sort of, for us, one of the bookends of the games. How are people in Britain viewing it? A raging success? Adequate? What's the feeling?
I think people are way beyond expectations in terms of how it's gone. Remember, we were promised transport chaos. We were promised security nightmares. We were promised all sorts of catastrophes. We Brits are very good at beating ourselves up in the event. We're better at taking the mickey out of ourselves and seeing the humour in our own failures. And quite often, it's a rich seam in comedy terms, let's face it. On this occasion, it feels like people talked up the catastrophes and then enjoyed the party. I think people have really, really got into the spirit of it, and I have to say the attitude and the responses in the main stage media have been absolutely fantastic. Everybody has been clapped. Everyone has been applauded. Every national anthem has been saluted.
Yeah.
And that said, of course, the roar is always 10 times louder for the Brits. But that's the way it is in these big stadia. One little thing I'd like to have seen done differently, and I was saying this on Twitter this morning, I'd like to have seen more public screens in the park. So people, mm-hmm. when they paid quite a lot of money for these big events, could come out and enjoy the rest of the party. And there's been one big screen, and that has been it. And that's rather galling. Others have said, however, that, you know, in previous games, there was nothing like that at all. But we're setting the standard slightly differently now. I'm comparing it to the German World Cup football, where the whole nation got into these huge public parties.
All right, parties. Rob, I can hear the enthusiasm in your voice, and I share it. We got to go because we got to get to some other stories. But that's Ron Broomby, correspondent for our partner, the BBC. Rob, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's turn, Farai, to some other stories here at home and some more serious. Valerie Cower, you're with us?
Yes, great to be here with you.
Glad you're here. Let's reset a little bit and talk about the tragic shootings from earlier this week, if we can, as people try to digest a little bit and come to terms with the shooting at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin. You're a documentary filmmaker. You've been close to that situation, and I want to get your impression of how that has started to sink in.
Sure. I've been with the Oak Creek community here for the last few days, and I want to say it's been a painful time for the community, a time of profound grief and sadness, but also a truly extraordinary few days. I mean, the Sikh community has never sustained a national spotlight like this, not since 9/11, and certainly not since, you know, for 100 years of history in this country, struggling to be seen as American. So I've watched people here on the ground, you know, especially young people, face the sea of cameras and find the words to tell the story of their faith to the world, and also call for an end to hate violence, not just against their own community, but against, you know, all Americans. Yesterday morning, the community was allowed to enter the Gurdwara for the first time. And let me tell you, when we walked in, it was a gruesome scene. There was blood on the carpet. There were bullet holes in the wall. This is a sacred space, so this was hard for people. But I watched within seconds. There was no time for paralysis. People launched into fierce, organized action, scrubbing the floors, painting over bullet holes, repairing broken windows, all preparing to see, to receive the public today. And I could hear the sound of prayers over the roar of construction. They were literally rebuilding the community before my eyes. And so I think I looked up and saw portraits of Sikhs who have died for their turbans, for their faith through our history, not just in America, but in India. And I saw this community really draw from that history of resilience to rise to this occasion.
That's Valerie Cower, documentary filmmaker, speaking with us about the shootings in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Farai Chidea, what is the aftermath of those shootings have you thinking about?
Well, you know, on my way into the studio, I was listening to NPR, and there was a generally good analysis, but kept going back to the idea that a lot of the white supremacists act alone, even if they are part of groups. I would challenge that. I spent time reporting on hate movements. Some years ago, I one time met a bunch of Klans people in a park and ride covered with snow. I talked to people in the Aryan Nation, which is now largely defunct. Although people may go out and shoot alone, there is a very large organized hate movement. And of course, most of those people will not actually commit a crime like this. But I think we need to stop thinking of people in the hate movement as lone rangers. There's a whole economic system around hate movements. There are fundraisers, barbecues, there's memorabilia. You know, this is an industry. And so I would like to think of this as part of a reframing of how hate movements in America operate. The reality is that they're not necessarily large in numbers, but the groups that exist are well organized and well funded. And I think that's something that has to be talked about.
Do you have any confidence that the nation is going to have that conversation in an election year when race is still an issue in our elections because we have a black president? You know, race is the thing that's always there in our politics, but nobody wants to talk about explicitly. Nobody's going to bring up what you're talking about right now, are they?
Many people don't. First of all, obviously, for obvious reasons, these groups are very secretive. There are groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center that track them. But one thing that I'm fascinated by that I don't know anyone can provide is, what is the dollar figure that represents the industry of hate? All of the bands and the merchandising, et cetera. I would love to see it from an economic perspective. I have never seen that story done. I don't know if it's possible. But that alone would fascinate me. If we could nail that down, I think people might see this as a more tangible threat.
And yet a discussion also on the corollary issue here, which is guns, which flared up after the shooting in Aurora, has not really flared up here.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, I think that guns are a third rail in politics in general for both Mitt Romney and President Obama.
And in an election year, maybe that's part of the reason why this stuff hasn't really flared up. That's journalist, writer, blogger, and radio personality Farai Chideh, a friend of the show, joining me in studio. Farai, I want to thank you. Thanks for coming in for our Follow Friday segment.